Hey, this is Kate. I'm a forensic psychologist and crisis clinician, and I collect stories. Everything from true crime to trauma to parenthood. There's a lot more in common between depression and sociopathy, or between serial killers and podcasters, than you might think. Are you sure you really want to know? This is Ignorance Was Bliss at iwbpodcast.com and iwbpodcast on social media.
Rolling. Yeah. Are you prepared for this? Did you put anything in the
Yeah, I put
the notes.
Well, not. I just put my
okay
shout out.
But you have your talking points.
Mm-hmm. They're in line with yours.
Okay.
They're kind of
observations. There's a lot here. This may end up being another long episode. This is a movie. This is a kind of a chore.
A chore? That's an interesting...
Yeah. Okay. I geared myself up to rewatch this. I knew this was going to be a mountain. We'll get into it. We'll talk about it.
I don't like this tone already.
No. It's not negative. It's just like, this is...
There's a lot here.
There is a lot here.
But I think it's a lot of good.
Let's talk about it in the episode.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to the Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. I'm Phil Rude. I am the dad.
And I'm the son, Austin Rude. Every week we watch a movie and then we talk about it. And this month is our Halloween month.
Our Halloween or scary movies. Ooh. Our scary or Halloween movies. We're going to figure out which one this falls into.
They're not all the same.
No, they're not. Not all are fun. As no. I think we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
Before we get into that, what have you been up to?
Same old, pretty much. I've gotten back into Korra.
Same. We're gearing up. Right. Behind the curtain, coming out of Halloween, we are going to review season 2. So.
Yes.
Yes.
Hopefully the better seasons after
that. I am in the... interesting. I'm actually enjoying season 2 quite a bit.
Oh my god.
This is
bizarro picture
this
show.
This is a preview of what's to come, but...
I'm still watching The West Wing, and then also, The Good Place season 4 dropped on Netflix.
Ooh, and we got a Good Place connection this week.
We do.
Yes.
One of the actors is in this. So, I binge-watched that this week.
I thought The Good Place was over.
It was.
I thought it was all on already streaming and everything, because I saw, like, this week, everyone was like, oh, thank God, it's finally on Netflix. And I'm like, I thought we were all done with, like, that? Isn't, like, Schitt's Creek having a new season come out or something like that, too? Like
Schitt's Creek just ended, too.
Yeah, okay. It's all of these things that I thought had ended a long time ago.
They ended on their respective channels, but they didn't hit streaming until this year.
Oh, I thought Schitt's Creek was a Netflix show.
No, it's actually Canadian.
Oh, okay. Canadians have Netflix, too.
Yeah, but it's like Pop or something.
Oh, okay.
And then it comes to Netflix a bit
Eugene later. Levy is Canadian.
Yeah.
He's from Toronto, I think. So... Yeah.
Makes sense.
It makes sense. He's a big star in Canada. He's a big star in America, too, but...
Yeah. Okay. What have you been watching?
Korra is about it. I've, just another kind of busy work week, and, trying to get caught up on art for the episodes. Like, we are recording ahead, but I'm not getting the art done as far ahead.
Right, that takes more time.
It does, and I... probably am not managing my time as well as I need to get it done. But hopefully, I've got some time off coming next week. Hopefully, I can get us caught up on that front, too. Because I do like to have it done. Just as of when we're recording this, our Get Out episode just dropped today. And I finished drawing that one, Saturday night. And I put the video together Sunday morning and posted it. Like, so it was like right down to the wire.
Careful, our boss will get mad at us if we don't.
Yeah. Don't let word get upstairs to management.
HR.
But that's it. Yeah, I don't really have anything going on. As far as watching Korra, just been sort of limping through that. Mm-hmm. Here and there when I get a minute, but that's about it. I watched a couple episodes this morning.
Right.
I'm enjoying Korra more than season one. I think there's always like a barrier of entry with me when the introductory season in a trilogy, you know, the first movie of a trilogy always is a little slow to me.
Right.
It's not necessarily the bad one, but it's, they're setting up so much stuff that I just get bored with that as opposed to getting into a bigger story. So
I can see that.
And there are some things that there are just some new characters that I'm enjoying. And
Boomy.
Boomy's pretty good. The rich Howard Hughes guy, he's pretty good.
Varric.
Varric?
Varric, okay, yeah. Varric and Julie.
Yeah, stuff like that. We'll get into that in a couple weeks, but
yeah.
I'm just, because I haven't...
Our sneak peek of the Korra episode.
More Korra coming up.
And we're really just becoming a Avatar fan show at this point.
Man, don't say that. I don't want that fan community knocking our door down and yelling at us.
They are a lot to handle.
as most big fanatic fandoms are. But this week, we watched something 1,000,000% different from Avatar world. This week... we subjected ourselves to the 2019 cinematic acid trip Midsommar, or Midsommar, as I've also heard it. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's Midsommar, but there's probably a proper pronunciation.
I think it's an old spelling of Midsommar.
Yes. This film stars Florence Pugh, Jack Rayner, Wilhelm Blomgren. Sorry if I stumbled on that. I'm Scandinavian, but... also an American.
Distantly.
Will Poulter and William Jackson Harper from The Good Place.
The Good Place. He is Chidi Onagunde.
And he's probably the most likable character in this movie.
He is.
I enjoy him.
Up until the point where he betrays the culture, he's...
It's not cool, but as far as...
I was rooting for
him. As far as his dynamic with the rest of the group, I feel like he is the most mature and sort of the most level-headed one.
He's the parent there.
He kind of is, yeah. This movie is directed and written by Ari Aster, and this was your first viewing, correct?
It was.
And you chose this movie.
I chose it.
Talk about why you picked this movie.
I have heard... so, my picture of this movie going in...
did you have one? Did you know what this movie was about?
I knew... okay, so I knew this is a scary movie that looks beautiful.
Right.
And is sort of trying to hide the fact that it's scary and, like, subverting things. That's as much as I knew. And it kind of lived up to that, but, like, not in the way that I was expecting.
See, I think the key to this movie is going in with no expectations.
Right.
Like, I feel like I avoided a lot about as much as I could about this movie before I saw it. This is my second time seeing it.
Right.
I knew that it was a horror movie that took place in the daylight. And everyone talked about, like, that's so, what a weird change. It doesn't look like a horror movie.
Yeah, that was what I kept hearing.
And I knew it had something to do with a cult. But that was it. And then I like deliberately avoided things. And I didn't see this movie until last winter sometime. So it took me a while to see it. And I think I enjoyed it much more because I didn't really have expectations other than people generally liked this movie.
Right. The only, I would say, spoiler was I heard... a joke, something about a bear.
The bear. I had heard
and
some,
I was like,
passing reference as well.
So they showed the bear in the cage, and I was like, that's going to come into play later, but I don't know how.
Well,
I thought someone was going to be fed to the bear.
There's so much, like, weird foreshadowing in this movie. There's mm-hmm. cases where they kind of show you exactly what's going to happen. The tapestries. There's a lot of imagery that comes back around.
I think that's kind of meant for, like, second and third viewing.
I definitely caught more this time around. The thing on, do you remember when they were first walking to the barn where they were sleeping?
Yeah.
And the camera pans around the tapestries of like the hieroglyphic.
It shows like this story.
The story of the pubic hair and the food, you know, like right. the love spell that it puts up. Like it, like that's pretty blatant, like foreshadowing. But they also show you that, like, right on the heels of showing you a bear in a cage out of nowhere. Like, this movie is so random that you can go, I know this is going to come into play. I'm not sure where. I'm not sure how. But then there's other things that are random that you don't really realize are foreshadowing that you don't catch till the second
time. It's kind
of
like the foreshadowing isn't in order. Like, you're just looking down at a bunch of puzzle pieces.
Yes. There's a painting in Danny's apartment, right by her bed, of a bear and a little girl.
I
didn't catch it the first time around either. There's no way you can. It's so far in the beginning of the movie.
Right.
When all of that mess is piling on you that you're just like, oh, okay. I guess it's a very large painting, and it's something in hindsight you go, oh, like, they obviously want you to see this painting. You should pay attention to it.
Right.
You know, but
they throw so much at you in the beginning that you're not focusing on a painting unless you're looking for
it. Right. There's other art in her apartment. There's a lot of plants in her apartment. I'm sure those other paintings have things to do, you know, some sort of foreshadowing or some sort of extra meaning. There's a lot of layers to this movie, I think.
They write in the side the exact plot of the movie. You just have to zoom in on it.
It's like if you look at like the computer screen where she's emailing her sister, like the subject headings of all the other emails in the sidebar, like, oh, this is a story of a...
You're going to become the queen.
The May Queen. Yeah. Yeah, I don't, I'm not really sure where to start with this movie. I mean, outside of, like, the expectations you had for it, and...
Can we start with the, I don't know, the vibe of this movie?
Sure. Because I think that's one of the big... I think the story of this movie is not as... It's not what makes this movie good or bad. I think the vibe of this movie and the themes of this movie.
Well, the plot of this movie is so simple.
It's fairly simple, yeah.
And like, that's not a... I'm not saying that as a bad thing.
I don't think simplicity is bad. No.
Right. I want to call this movie a dark Wes Anderson movie.
Ooh.
Like, some of the shots, one in particular screamed Wes Anderson to me. When they're at the cliff scene, and, like, they have everyone lining up to watch, and then our main characters are, like, behind the camera, and this one guy turns to look at them, so he's, like, the only one in the crowd looking at them.
Uh-huh.
It just, something about it was Wes Anderson.
Well, Wes Anderson is kind of abstract and just sort of... I think he's a lot about things just being quirky and offbeat and feeling like they don't belong. Like, his stories are about misfit people most of the time.
Right.
And this is not necessarily about misfit people. It's about lost people. But it does fit into... I can see, like, there's a weird connection to it that... To what you're saying, to Wes Anderson, in that everything in his movies is just sort of like intentionally there to show you how out of place this is. And here, this just has things like a bear in a cage. And they go, we gonna talk about the bear? And I'm like, no. What? Yeah, it's just a bear. And the guy who looks at, you know, the smash cut to the faceless corpses being put on the funeral pyre, you know, like out of nowhere. It's just... There's a lot of very strange things that don't feel like they fit into this movie. Wes Anderson does it, I think, for the sake of comedy. I think this movie is doing it to make you feel uneasy.
Right.
Like, if you don't feel uneasy watching this entire movie, Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you may want to check your meds.
Again, it's like that link between comedy and horror.
Yes.
It's the same tools being used.
I think so. I think we're getting to the bottom of something here.
By the end of this month, we're going to have a full
We're going to have a TED movie. Talk that we're doing about... I know other people have explored this.
It's not original.
Yeah. But no, that's a really interesting take on that, because I hadn't really considered that there's some sort of Wes Anderson leak. In there.
Well, there's also a lot of symmetry, and he does that.
I want to talk about symmetry. I want to talk about the visuals, but that's a big conversation, a big chunk of what I want to talk
about.
Do
we want to take a break first?
We'll take a break and come back with that. But as far as the other side of that visual, the big temple, the big yellow thing at the very end, that's a very Wes Anderson looking, something like from Moonrise Kingdom where they're the scout camp. I don't know if you saw it. Did you see Moonrise Kingdom?
I haven't.
About the Boy Scout camp. It just looks like something out of there. You know, there's always a kid in a wigwam or something like that. And
it's geometric. It's colorful. It stands out against this natural background.
And it also, it feels very out of place again. Same kind of thing. So, yeah, I can see it. It's nothing I would have put together, but I can totally see like a Wes Anderson parallel there. That's really interesting. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back because there's a lot to unpack here. So
yeah, let's do it.
All right.
The following is paid for by the Coalition for a Better Hollywood. For decades, Big Movie has had Hollywood studios in their back pocket. They spend millions to get you to spend billions on movies that are nothing more than sequels, reboots, remakes, reimaginings, Oscar cliche and January releases. Big movie lobbyists have all but ensured original film ideas are ignored, forgotten, or maybe not even real. Are they feature films? Are they quality flicks? Are they real motion pictures? Your soon-to-be, if not already favorite movie podcast stands with the little movies. Help put an end to Big Movie's cinematic censorship and listen to the pop-up film cast every Tuesday wherever honest hard-working podcasts can be found. We are the Pop-Up Film Cast, a proud member of the Podfix Network, and we support this message.
Hi, this is Mouse.
I'm Weens.
We have the Mouse and Weens podcast.
Mouse and Weens.
I'm a big sister in San Diego with kids, and I'm married.
And I have no... friends. No, I'm just kidding. No, I do. I have friends. I just don't have any boyfriends or love. Anyway, Mouse and Weens podcast. You should listen to it.
Yeah, it's
not
really
depressing.
Fun. We talk about family stories, life and love, and kids, and all the things you're interested in. We promise.
Yay!
Celebrities in Hollywood, too.
Poke your little turtle head out and come listen to us.
Mouse and Weens. Bye.
And we're back.
Welcome back.
Did you have a good trip?
I did.
Good.
Acid trip.
Good.
A mushroom trip.
Did you drink the tea or did you just eat the shroom?
I'm no pussy. I ate the shroom.
Wow. Calling I'm out kidding. Danny right away for drinking the tea.
She was peer pressured into that, by the way.
I am going to say I had a friend of mine say this was a very accurate depiction of a mushroom trip. I was never a drug guy. I was always a little bit afraid of psychedelics. Now, at this point in my life, I'm a little curious about psychedelics.
I've never had shrooms.
You say that like you want me to believe you've never had shrooms. Austin, you're an adult. I'm not going to sit here and judge you for what you have and have not done. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know. But a lot of what is depicted in this is why I was always afraid of psychedelics. The bad trips.
Oh, the bad real, trip. I think insane.
Nobody had a good trip until the very end of this. I think everybody was having a bad trip through this entire movie.
It always starts out good, though. Like, when they're just sitting by the tree. And, well, that the kid was being annoying.
I don't
one
yeah,
guy.
I don't think, I think, who was the Swedish guy? Pelle.
Pelle.
I think he was having a good trip, and I think the guy from The Good Place, Josh. I think he was right. having an even trip. I think everybody else around that tree was struggling. You could see everybody's uneasy. Danny's good for a little while until someone mentions family, and that sets
right.
it. But I think that trip also sets the stage for what this movie is ultimately about. And it's about the instability of Danny, that she's clinging to all these things. The idea of finding her footing keeps coming back around. Remember, she says, I don't want to take it yet. I got to find my footing.
Right. She's in a new place.
She's in a new place. She wants to settle in. She wants to be comfortable. And this entire movie, Danny is never settled in, even when she's at home, even before she comes to Sweden.
Right.
She's always in this really unhealthy transition. And I think that's kind of an interesting part of this movie, is this is about Danny finding her footing.
I would agree to that.
At the end, when she becomes a May Queen and they put her on that platform, she's uneasy, and then she is finally finding her balance. This movie's theme, and I think there's a lot of schools of thought on this. I watched somebody on YouTube called The Critical Drinker.
Okay.
And he plays this character of this drunk who reviews movies. And he's not for everybody, but a lot of what he talks about, he hates this movie. And I've not watched his videos on Midsummer because I don't want it to. But I think a lot of his problem that he has in some movies like this, is that the theme is the main focus. And everything around the theme is not as well developed. And I think in some movies that doesn't work because it is just an idea that is poorly executed. But I would argue that this is pretty well executed, but the theme is the main focus of this movie.
I've seen movies
of independence and moving on and rebirth.
I've seen movies where they focus on the theme and they have like a really interesting plot, but it keeps getting sidelined.
Right.
And that is what infuriates me, or just if the plot is bad.
Do you have examples of that?
Not off the top of my head. I'm bad at thinking.
I didn't know if you were thinking of something in particular. Because I know those movies exist.
I know that right. feeling.
Sure. I mean, we all watch movies where we go, God, what a great idea. I wish it had been executed better.
I want to be in that writer's room. Like,
sure. Where you go, they should have done this. Or you should, you know, like right. those are kind of fun to talk about.
But I feel like the plot of this movie is so simple that you don't really need to focus on it. You get all that you need from these side scenes,
sure.
almost.
I think a lot of the idea of a movie like this that irritates people is after the old couple pitches themselves off the cliff, like, any rational person would have gone back, packed up their bag, and just walked out of that commune.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they keep going, can we have a ride? And I understand they're in the middle of nowhere. But, like, they walked most of the way there from the main road where they came. Or I don't know the exact geography, but it does seem plausible that they could find
You're
a way out of there.
Physically trapped.
Right. You know, there's a truck there. There's a vehicle there. There's some way you could have left that place.
The part that bugs me is when the British couple goes missing, I could excuse
sure.
being like, oh, okay, they left. But when it's down to two people
sure.
and you're still...
There's obviously something going on here.
Right.
Yeah.
But I also think part of it is that they're on drugs 90% of this movie.
Well, I mean, it is like the cult thing of like, hey, let's keep them
docile.
On drugs. Right. Like there is a very like cult. I mean, it is a cult. It is a
right.
commune cult like the Manson family with less dune buggies.
The way I envision this movie is sort of that. We, the audience, along with these Americans that are in the movie, are being lured into a trap, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so you keep forgetting about it until these gruesome things like the cliff
sure.
and them slowly getting picked off one by one happen. But up until then, you're almost like, yeah, I can see the appeal of this.
Sure. I mean, they get there, they're blown away. This is beautiful. This is great. Even when they first show up and take mushrooms just in this pasture, they're like, this is beautiful. This is amazing.
And you guys do this all the time?
And they're blown away by the fact that it's 9 o'clock at night and the sun is still, you know, everything is this new world to them and they're very taken in by it.
Right.
And I, you know, the barn they sleep in, everybody is super friendly to them when they show up, and there's these big communal feasts, and everything is very, on top of just the beauty of it, everything is very strange and you would be curious about it.
Right.
Like, I was telling you, I've been reading some H.P. Lovecraft stuff.
Yeah.
And the H.P. Lovecraft racism is hard to ignore when you know about his personal life, but it also shows up in his writing and the way he talks about Native people and the way he talks about African-American people and things like that. And I'm talking about, I guess it's not even African-American. In some cases, he's talking about people who come from Africa, indigenous right. people. There's a correlation that Lovecraft makes where it's sort of the flip side of this. In this movie, they're in this alien place, and they're very curious about everything, and they're trying to be very open-minded and take it all in and be very respectful. And when Lovecraft describes alien cultures, and keep in mind, this was, you know, very much a product of its time,
right?
But also, it is a strange and terrifying sort of primitive, right? You know what I mean? Like,
Lovecraft is all about the fear of
the unknown. Fear of the unknown, as opposed to the wonder of the unknown.
This is a man who was terrified of leaving his hometown.
It's just, I mean, it's not just Lovecraft. A lot of old writing, the old Tarzan novels. Right. I've read some of the Burroughs stuff, and his depictions of Native people aren't much better. Like, it is just sort of this. You live in a colonized place,
right?
And your country is exploring the world, and that's very wondrous, and it seems very romantic and very adventurous. But they have this sort of like unhealthy idea of, like you said, fear of the unknown. I think this movie is doing the opposite of that in a positive way. But everything goes south, like they should be afraid right. in this one. And it's a very strange dichotomy when you put the two against each other and you go, oh, aren't they great for being positive and being curious and wanting to learn? And then it all, like, oh no, you should have been very afraid of
right.
this place.
This movie keeps asking the question, sort of like, what is custom and what is actually ethical?
Sure.
There's this thing I learned about, and this is an extreme example, but it's what I thought of during the cliff scene, is there is a Native indigenous tribe in Brazil, and they essentially practice infanticide because they don't have abortion.
Sure.
And if there is an unwanted pregnancy or some... like, they can't feed enough children. Right. But they do it in, like, a respectful way.
So euthanasia sort of... or not quite euthanasia. Right. I guess it's not a mercy
but
thing. But, yeah.
To them,
yeah.
It is peaceful, respectful, and it's a custom.
The Native customs are hard for, the Western world to get their head around.
Right. Because each culture has its own definition of what is moral and ethical. And so it's kind of like, are we actually in the wrong when we view this? Is there a concrete definition of what is ethical?
I think we have a very... I think there's a lot of stuff today, and this is just... I'm not super educated in it. Like,
sure.
We can look at Middle Eastern countries where women have to be covered, where women aren't allowed to drive, where, you know what I mean? Like, and slowly that is changing. And it's easy for us to look at that and go, how terrible. Look how they, and it is a cultural thing.
Right.
And it is hard to know where do we draw the line between saying your women deserve to be educated and have rights.
And also, where and is it our
being,
place?
Being respectful to, that's their culture for them to figure out.
Right.
Yeah, that, I'm not going to talk anymore. I have opinions about, and not, I just don't want to be disrespectful to any mm-hmm. cultures, but I have seen a lot of...
Because that's kind of the thing, is our opinions don't necessarily matter to that culture.
Sure.
It's, they're going to do what they want to do. They're going to do, and...
As much as our culture seems backwards to other nations, we wouldn't want people to come in.
Right.
You know, but I've seen a lot of immigrants. We're in a very immigrant-heavy part of, we live in South Florida. I mean, it's, and there's just different cultural norms everywhere. And you just sort of have to know, do I say something? Do I, you know, like there's, you see a lot of different things from a lot of different cultures.
Right.
And you just, you try to respect the norms.
Right.
The norms to them.
In this movie, the cliff thing, I keep coming back to it because...
It seems very extreme, and I get it.
It's horrific to watch, right. But then she describes it, and it's like, oh, this is beautiful.
I understand the symbolism of it, but yes, it's also being...
When they get the hammer out,
it's also being romanticized by people who are not pitching themselves off of cliffs.
Right. But,
and we also see, like, at the very end... Like, this high honor thing is to be burned alive in the fire.
Right.
And the two who are still alive in there and have been given the drug to feel no pain, quote unquote, just start screaming in agony.
And
know,
they
like,
look scared.
They are, you know, the idea of, oh, this was a good idea until it actually happened to us.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of really... Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting conversation I think to be had about cultural norms and this and cultural extremes, ritualistic extremes.
Right. This movie is about extremes.
This movie's totally about extremes, as including extreme rules. And this is where I like that segue.
Ooh.
I'm going to talk about the visuals of this movie.
Let's do it.
All right. A lot of geometry in this movie.
So much.
Everything.
Must have had a mathematician on site.
Everything is straight lines. Everything is symmetrical. Everything follows a strict rule.
Right.
Everything fits in a box. And that's, I think that's to let you know you walk into this place that seems very free. It seems very open. You know, there's no rules. Nobody owns anything. These commune rules.
But there's but very clearly a structure.
Very, right. There's very strict rules, actually. You know, like, they're, right. You know, here, you mate with this person. Here, you can't piss here. You
yeah.
can't, you know, everything is very strict here. Much more than what they realize when they walk in there. And I think the fact that the buildings are all... Very rigid, very straight lines. Everything is very straight lines. The tables are laid out in these symmetrical rune. Like they
right.
look like the rune alphabets.
Yeah, but I will say about the buildings, they are geometric and strict, but they also go with the flow of like the curve of the hill.
Oh, they fit in. They fit right. into the surrounding. It is like... It is like this idea that they belong with nature.
Right.
You know, when they're tripping by the tree, when they first get there, and Pele says, you know, feel the energy coming from the earth. And, you know, look at nature. Nature knows all the rules. Nature knows, you know, how to keep itself in balance. It's all about this balance that comes from this set of rules. Even when it looks wide open and free. And I think that's a really, like, this undercurrent of, like, oh, no, this is almost militaristic in their structure of rules.
Right.
It's not this free society that you think it is. And I think that's the first sort of, like, warning sign of that. The symmetry is, like, off the chain in this movie. It's like Kubrick symmetry. Everything is not necessarily dead center, but even like when what's his name? What's a boyfriend's name?
I don't know. The douchebag?
Yeah. That's him. But he is in Christian.
Okay, Christian.
He's in the bear suit in the fire, and everything is like on fire behind him. And then the flames are like creeping towards him on the side, and they're coming in at the same, they're coming in together.
Right, they're lines.
They're lines that are coming in. The flame is in exactly the same place on either side.
They set them all at the three corners.
Everything
and it's
is,
all...
yes, everything, the bales of straw are laid out in, again, another rune stone kind of alphabet, but it's symmetrical. It's geometric. It's all great. I mean, the way this movie is executed visually, I think, is
right.
Amazing.
Another thing is camera movements.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of panning forward or panning to the side. And one thing is they keep going upside down. And something about, like, whenever I'm upside down, I get uneasy. I don't know if that's universal, but it's definitely how I feel. So every time they did that, I was like, oh, man.
I think
like,
it's about being in the alien world. You're in the upside down, you know, to take it to Stranger Things. You know,
right.
You're up is down, left is right, you know, whatever. You know, you're through the looking glass, basically. You know, they're in a... They did that at a strategic point where, oh, hey, you know, this isn't what you think it is now. The world is different for you now. And I think that was done really well. The camera thing that I noticed was there's so much stuff that's far away that they're watching the action take place, but the camera isn't right up there.
Right.
Like they're just, you're getting the dialogue, you're getting, when Connie's boyfriend goes missing and the guy's like, oh yeah, he said to tell you he went to town. He'll send a truck for you. You know, like there's something very obviously wrong. And you can imagine what her face is doing, but
you
don't
can't
need,
see it.
You don't need to see it.
Right.
You just need to hear it, and you see it from a distance. You feel removed from it, but you're still invested in it. It's a strange dichotomy that I really liked.
Right. And with that scene in particular, it's a still shot.
Yeah.
And there's three characters, and they all enter at different times and exit at different times.
Right.
And then we're just left with, again... An empty screen, and then we go on to the next thing. I really liked that shot.
I think this movie is shot really well. I mean,
yeah.
in general, and it's cut together really well. The cliff scene, again, when the big buildup, and she thinks they're going to jump.
Right.
And then they don't. And then they do. And they don't show you him jumping at first. You get Danny's gasp. And she grabs Christian's arm. That is just such a great way to break the tension.
It tells you everything.
But then they do show you the most graphic thing. You know, but it is just sort of like, if they had just kept it on Danny, I think it would have been just as effective.
Right.
I don't need to see him hitting the rock.
I do think this movie wants to show you that. It wants to be gruesome.
This movie wants to go deep into... The gross.
Well, part of that, I think, is that they're trying to have this balance between the beauty of nature luring you in and this horrible violence that comes with the cult. And they can't really do that effectively if they're showing you all of this beauty and making you forget and then just like kind of cutting away.
Sure. I mean, they are showing you, like, it is the beauty of nature, but, like, this is also the ugliness of nature, too. Like,
right.
That there is a beauty in death is what they're trying to say, even if it looks ugly.
Yes.
But it's horrifying to these outsiders.
Is there... Okay, so I have a weird question, and I don't know if this is just me, but this movie, parts of it feel like an old movie. Like, visually, and I don't know if it's... what it's shot on or the way it's shot or like just that it's long takes sometimes.
It could be.
But I kept getting vibes of that.
I think this is just, it may be the pace of this movie. This movie is paced incredibly slow. Like if they're going to walk to another building, you're going to follow them walking and doing nothing. I mean, right. It really is like part of the reason that I call this movie a chore is because this movie is it is kind of a drag.
Right.
I don't think it's uninteresting.
There's things to look at.
I'm never uninterested while watching this movie, right. But it is like, I know this movie is a big thought exercise. This movie is long and this movie is slow and this movie is full of unlikable people. Right. So in knowing that going in the second time, I was like, okay, let's do this.
Like, you have to prepare yourself.
It's I don't want to say prepare yourself, like, but you just have to be willing to put yourself in the chair and pay attention for 2.5 hours. And that's not a big deal. That's not a lot to ask.
Right.
But you can't look at your phone during this. Like, you can't have your attention divided. This movie deserves your entire attention. And you have to ride it through all the rough spots of watching Christian and Danny's horrible codependent relationship that is just excruciating to watch. Because It is so fucking unhealthy that it drives me insane to sit and watch these people who should not be together force themselves to be together.
Yes. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, it's a huge part of this movie. We need to talk about it. Yeah.
One of my favorite things about the way they characterize Christian was when they show him going up. I don't know his name in this. Chidi. When they show him going up against
Josh.
Josh? Yeah. Okay. And being like, hey, I'm going to do
my thesis
on
the
this.
Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And he calls him out on it. Josh is like,
yeah,
you can't manipulate me like that. Right. That's so sad. And we've been watching him do this to Danny the whole movie.
Right.
So it's really like I caught it beforehand, but if you hadn't, like, it's a big wake-up call and just kind of shows, like, the difference in this friendship versus the codependence.
Well, you get to, yeah, I mean, you kind of get this sense that he is this way not only with Danny. This is just how he is. He's a manipulative person.
It's the only way he knows how to communicate.
He's a lazy person. He's, and he's a weak person. Like,
yeah.
His entire thing for being with Dan, he's getting ready to break up with her, and then this huge tragedy happens to her, and then he feels trapped, which is terrible. And you kind of empathize with him at the beginning. You kind of go, I get it. He's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to not abandon his girlfriend.
He doesn't want to make her do what her sister did.
And at the same time, she's sort of holding him back, too. You know what I mean? She goes to a party. He doesn't really want her to go because he knows she's not going to be a good time. She's going to go and bring the party down.
Right.
Not her fault. She's working through some shit.
Right.
You know, she gives him a hard time about wanting to go to Sweden. You know what I mean? Like, and he's just like, well, yeah, I was going to, you kind of get the sense he's very trapped in there. He can't leave her alone.
They both sort of are.
I'm not saying that one person is worse than the other. I think they're both. I think ultimately he shows himself to be the worst person. But I'm saying at the beginning, you can kind of go, I get where she's coming from, but she's also doing a big disservice to him.
Right.
And he is trying to be of help to her, but he's doing a big disservice to her as well. Like, it's a very just unhealthy relationship all the way around. We go further down that road and we just understand, like, yeah, he's just a very toxic person.
And there's no future here. There's nothing sustainable.
I think it really shows itself when she comes to the apartment and he tells his friends, like, oh, I invited her, but don't worry, she's not going to come. Like,
right.
He did this token invite, and was like, she's not going to come. I did this just to smooth things over. And there, you know, it's just sort of like, oh, he invites her, but he doesn't want her to go.
And then she goes.
But it's like, it's one of those things where I've been invited to things that people didn't want me to come to. You know what I mean?
You can tell.
And right. And it just is that thing where it's just sort of like, don't invite me. If you don't want me to go, you know what I mean? And it's just, so for me, these kind of things like strike this chord of like, oh, this is just terrible behavior. It's just toxic any way you cut it up.
Right.
And the longer they're there, the more it wears on, you know, the more apparent it becomes to Danny. The birthday thing, you know, all of these things just sort of add up to.
Right. They're slight, but they paint a picture. It's not just he made one mistake.
Right.
It's that these mistakes are coming from him being a bad person.
Right. Yeah. 100% agree. And by the end of it, of course, you know.
And also, the Swedes are painted as kind of good people, I think. One of the parts of this movie that I like is that feeling of a family and unity that she gets from becoming the May Queen. And from, like, dancing with them. And, like, right. Yes, this is a weird cult that has its downsides. But also she kind of feels free and like she has a family and she gets rid of her toxic ex. Well, I can't blame her.
Let's talk about this. The hero of the movie is Danny. And she wins by murdering her ex.
She wins by joining the enemy.
Right. But, oh man. This is where this movie gets complicated.
Right, yeah.
Because this is a movie about rebirth. You have to get rid of everything in your past in order to be reborn.
Right. We see that in the seasons too.
We see it in the seasons and we see it in Pele's backstory. My parents burned up in a fire and then this commune took me in and they became my family. He was able to leave. He left his parents behind. The consequences of that fire, I don't know. Maybe they were sewn into bear suits. Maybe they went, you know, maybe.
I hadn't thought of that.
But Pele was able to be reborn by being taken into the cult. He's not mourning his parents anymore.
Right.
And this is her getting past her family tragedy, her getting past this addiction to a toxic person that she is with. Mm-hmm. She burns it all. And the second she does that, she smiles for the first time in the movie.
Right.
She smiles. She's happy. She's free of all the shit that is weighing her down.
But it's not an immediate smile. She like feels happy and then she kind of freaks out a bit.
But everybody's freaking out. That's part of the ritual of burning these people in the.
Right.
In the temple.
Yeah, they're acting like they're all in pain. They're
in the ecstatic, and I just took that as an extension. Or
I kind of thought it was her actual emotion.
I think it's partly that too. It's her pain dying. Her past life is dying, and then she's reborn. So the idea that you win by joining the murderous cult is such a mixed emotion thing.
It is.
So
it's the same thing as The Witch. That was
yes.
That was
yes. It is
what that movie. It's these female heroes joining with the villains because their life is horrible.
But that's the thing. Is this villain? This brings us back in this one. Is this villainous? Is the cult villainous, or is this just a different cultural norm?
See, I'm willing to accept that it could be a cultural norm, except for the fact that they're killing people who aren't a part of the community.
That's true.
Who did not... If they were just killing their own, I'd be like, okay, sure.
Now it gets to be like Wild Wild Country. Shout out to Wild Wild Country, documentary series on Netflix.
I haven't seen it.
About a cult that sets up shop in this Pacific Northwest town, outside of the town. Right. And they basically go to war with the townspeople, who just can't leave them alone. And it's just this back and forth, and you end up hating everybody equally. And it's just great. It's just such a great documentary. But, no, I agree. They kill Josh. They kill Mark. They kill Connie and, I don't remember the boyfriend's name.
I don't know.
From London.
Right.
You're right. They kill these people, partly in offering, right?
Right. And they lure them there, too. They're like, oh, we're your friends. We're going to take you to see our family.
Right.
It's so... They're lying. They are very clearly like, these people aren't going to like it here.
Well, that's another thing you catch on the rewatch is when they first show up and take mushrooms. And Pele's like, oh, these are all the other young people who are coming back from their trips out into the world too.
Right.
Like, they've sent these people out to recruit all these outsiders because they need new genes in the gene pool, basically. New blood in the gene pool. Which is, yeah, let's talk about the most uncomfortable scene to watch with your son.
Very.
The Council of MILFs in the...
I was going to be mature. I was going to keep a straight face. Up until the part where they start moan singing, that is where I full on lost it.
Well, the look on Christian's face when that woman like hovers down close to him and he's on psychedelics and really just having a hard time with it. And for anybody who doesn't know, that is the perfect visualization of the algorithm of Swedish Tender. That's exactly what it looks like.
That's what they do.
These old naked women moan until they find a match for you. But yeah, it's a very like strange scene, but I think it speaks to like the ritualistic nature. Mm-hmm. It's leaning in at that point and going, oh yeah, we're full on cult. Like this is...
I don't quite understand how that plays into like the themes or if that's a metaphor or anything. Like, I don't know what it is outside of what it actually is, which is
right.
A ritualistic sex scene.
I think it's a mating scene more than a sex scene. You know,
right.
It's about bringing new blood in. It's about, I don't know if... She was intended to catch them so that it becomes, so she is able to purge that and, you know.
Right.
It is hazy. I kind of think it's just a plot point of this is the cult in action.
Okay.
This is the purpose he's here for. Because clearly, like, they're brought in for, Pele targets Danny, essentially.
Right.
When he finds out she's coming, he really sort of turns on his heel and he's like, I'm glad you're coming. And he legitimately is because he likes her.
Right.
And
he wants her to be a part of their family.
He wants her to be part of that community. He's probably in love with her on some level, I think. And he understands the role that Christian is going to play when he gets there, too.
Right.
And that he will soon be pushed out one way or another.
I guess I asked because I feel like... I might be reading into it too much, but I feel like there's an Adam and Eve metaphor in there.
Oh, I
like,
think...
Like, there's this bed of leaves, and then afterwards he's running around and he covers his nakedness. Which is something that happens in the story of Adam
and
Eve.
Right.
Yeah. So I wasn't sure if that was, like, on purpose or if I'm just, like, reading into this with...
I don't think that's a bad read. If it's not intended, it still comes through, and I think there's probably a parallel there. All of it, I mean, the fact that there's leaves, that there's plants everywhere, that there's flowers everywhere. It's all about rebirth. That's what springtime is, a rebirth. You know, they bring up the seasons of life all the time.
Right.
It's right in line with, like, Easter, like Christian Easter. There's that's all about rebirth.
Well, Easter originally is the goddess of spring.
Right. But the Easter, the holiday, is about the rebirth of Christ. And that's why it's celebrated at the time of year that it is.
Yeah.
Other stories have done this, like American Gods in the novel. There's the Shadow is basically reborn under the life tree.
Right, the tree of life.
Yeah, the Norse, tree of earth or tree
of life. It gives him knowledge
Right, it basically kills and rebirths him.
Right.
But, I mean, all of these things, I love it as a theme. I love the idea of rebirth because it is something you can do in your life. And this is, legitimately, you can start chapters of your life. But this, I really like the portrayal of it in this because it is, I mean, this is very extreme where you're actually killing people. But it is about, like, you have to purge things from your life and you have to purge, you don't have to put them in bear suits and kill them. But
you can.
Sometimes, please do not. We do not condone.
Yes, we do.
But you do have to sometimes purge people from your life. You have to just cut them off and say no more.
You can't keep toxic relationships.
Right.
In whether romantic or just friends.
Friends, sometimes family. It's right. You have to do what's good for you. So yeah. I really like that as a theme and I like that as an idea. And I think it's very well executed here. And, you know, we sort of see Dani come into her own the longer she's there. She's resisting it.
Right.
But she does, by the time...
She's the one that really knows all of the shady shit that's going on. Like, she's more cautious than any of the other Americans. Like, the moment the boyfriend of the other girl goes missing... She's like, this isn't right, and she's suspicious, but that's kind of what she needs to accept them, like, so it's not as a shock, kind of.
Right. She sort of purges her suspicion at the same time and kind of, I think, comes around to just accepting the cult for what it is. Because it's somehow, like, giving her confidence, too. Like, by the time she takes the tea for the dance contest...
Right.
You know, she's sort of leaning in, and by the time she's done, and they put the May crown on her, then she's like, oh, okay. All right, this is all about me now, and I've kind of found... She kind of, I think, feels at home a little bit.
Right. I think it's beautiful. And I think one thing that really ties it together is the music, especially in that last scene. There's something about it, as everything's burning.
It's almost triumphant.
And they're free. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
And then it gets a bit scary. That's why I think she realizes kind of the reality of it for a second, is the music gets eerie again, but then it goes back to triumphant and she smiles.
Well, I mean, it's... I think it balances the two because it's both. I mean, it is, she is triumphant, but she's also a member of a murder cult now. You know, like it's...
There's pros and cons to everything.
That's what I'm talking about with this movie. I don't know if she wins or not, you know, but... yeah, I guess on a personal level, she... Kind of does.
Yeah.
She just goes to a very extreme measure to do it.
And she might not even stick with the cult.
Think she'll leave?
Maybe.
Maybe.
She gets over her family tragedy and maybe she's like, oh, okay.
I kind of got a feeling they don't really let people just walk away from that cult.
Probably not.
I think they're kind of like...
Unless you're walking off a cliff.
You're right. There's one way off that cult and
yeah.
It's at that cliff. But, Yeah. Okay, you got anything else about this? I mean, I'm sure we could probably keep going.
There's so much to talk about, but I can't think of specifics.
Well, let's talk one more visual thing and see if that kicks anything up.
Right.
A lot's been made about the fact that this takes place in daylight. You know, like it's not dark like a horror movie.
Right.
But the American scenes, the pre-Sweden scenes are dark. Like, that's all very dark. The very beginning of this movie is murder-suicide. You know, and that sort of sets the table. That's just backstory to why Danny is the way Danny is.
Yeah.
But that's not even, like, that kicks you in the teeth at the very beginning of the movie. And that's not even what the movie's about, really. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not even the plot of the movie.
I think part of the day thing is expectation.
Sure.
Because they set the mood as this very dark, edgy, and literally dark movie in the first act.
Yeah.
And then they switch almost violently, like with the plane.
Yeah.
She's just on the plane crying, and then she sits down, and we get this beautiful sun.
The light is right. Coming through, yeah.
And then the rest of the movie is just bright, except for when the Americans are, like, being attacked. Like, the only other dark scene I can remember is when Josh goes into the sacred place to read the whatever, and then he dies. I think that's the only other night scene.
Yeah. There's just a couple at night. There's the one where she dreams that they're leaving her behind.
Right.
There's the one where, that woman leaves the rune under Christian's bed.
Okay.
That's a little dark. There's just a couple like that. But I really think the light is reflective of where Danny is in her life. Even before her parents die, it's all dark. Everything's dark. Everything's dingy. Everything's gross. Because her life is, you know, even when they're alive, she's not happy. She's right. Not in this good place. Her sister is unbalanced and taking a toll on her emotionally.
You know, right. We see that all in the beginning.
You know, she really is just in a bad place. And I think the brightness and the sunshine of Sweden is sort of like, oh, this is the direction her life is going. Again, like, this is about an individual victory. It comes at a great cost to everybody around her, but this is about her, the track of her life, that it's getting better. Everything's brighter now. Once she's in Sweden,
She's not instantly happy in Sweden.
No, she's not, but she's on that track. And by the end of it, she's there. She's covered in flowers. She's born again, you know?
I'd agree with that.
So, yeah, it's just a little something that I noticed, because everybody talks about the sunlight in this movie. It takes place in the daytime.
It looks like The Sound of Music.
Right. It's an interesting look for a horror movie, but
it is.
But it works.
I would much rather have this than what I thought it was, which would just be like a slasher film in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, cult movies are scarier to me because
they're real.
Cults are real. Right.
Well, so are murderers, but
sure.
There's something more sinister.
There's something I find really fascinating about cults. They're typically pretty disgusting and manipulative. But there's something, I'm fascinated by the idea that somebody can take in that many people. And I get it on a lot of levels, and it's not a reflection on people who fall into that, but it's just that people can sense vulnerability enough to manipulate somebody into, and
it's
and
really real interesting cult. How
I think it has a lot. There's actually a joke about it in this movie it has a lot to do with the fact that when I was in high school, early high school, I think, is when the Branch Davidian standoff in Waco, Texas happened.
Right.
And that was a big news story that I was not like a big current events kid, but I really followed that story because I was really fascinated with the idea of cults from that point forward. And they even make a joke when they get to the commune, Mark, the douchebag vape kid, says something like, "Oh, I didn't know we were stopping in Waco before we go to Pele's town."
Oh, I didn't didn't catch that.
Like, he makes a joke about it being this big, you know, hippie commune.
I love how the idiot in this movie guesses actually it before right. all of them. Take that with your PhD, Josh.
Poor Josh.
Yeah, he got what's coming.
Shouldn't have read the Swedish Bible.
That's really, I was on his side up until then. I was like, the moment he snuck into there, I was like, whatever happens to you, you deserve it.
Wow. Austin, pulling no punches.
Respect people's culture, even if it's weird. If they gave you permission to study them and then you still go behind their back, that's just a whole new kind of
messed up.
I've
heard you have the science versus religion debates and sometimes come out not quite as respectful as maybe you should be towards Christianity.
I try to be. I know I don't
and
always.
To hear you come out against Josh on this is kind of shocking.
I'm trying to learn.
I will cut this out if you want me to.
No.
I'm not trying to paint you in a bad light. But
I think part of that is that I could see myself doing that, and I don't want to do that. So it would... I was like... mad at myself, like, don't do that. That's wrong of
you. It's also very unlikely that this little cult influences Swedish government policy as well.
That's true.
They're not teaching cliff diving in Swedish science classrooms.
They don't have a pope that controls half of Europe. Yeah,
the pope does control half of Europe.
I know. Anyways, I don't know where to go from here.
I don't know where to go from here either. But no, I feel like Josh's punishment was a little bit harsh. But,
yeah.
Also, pretty creepy. But, that's Midsommar. Or Midsommar. Yeah, let's close that out. Do you recommend it, for one?
I would recommend this.
It's a wholehearted...
Maybe with some acid? No.
Ooh, man. I don't know if I'll go there, but you may want to remember this
movie. The movie gives you enough acid in it without...
I do feel like I said, a friend who said it's a very realistic depiction of... But the uneasiness that they're feeling, I did feel that while watching it.
Me too.
I do feel like if you took... a psychedelic drug and then watch this movie, I think it might be very close to pushing you over the edge. Anyone who is listening to this, who has psychedelic drug experience, let me know if you think that's the case, because I feel like if you were already mind altered and then you put the vibe of this movie might just
it's
push
gonna
you
send
into
you
a
into
really
a
dark
bad,
place.
Yeah. I will say I prefer this sort of psychedelic surrealism to the 2001 ending.
Interesting.
'Cause it's a bit more subtle. That movie is supposed to simulate an acid trip. That's just what people say. But
I think visually it probably simulates it. I think where it works here, where maybe it doesn't work for you in 2001, is this is a more cohesive plot. 2001 is a big idea movie.
Right. And it's more grounded.
They incorporate, there's a very abstract plot by that point in 2001.
Right.
Here, it's telling a story, and this sort of is symbiotic with the plot of this movie. The drug stuff.
Yes, so, I agree.
So that probably helps. Is this a Halloween movie or is this a horror movie?
No.
Have a good time with this?
I had a great time with this. This is not a Halloween movie. There is no fall. There's a fall.
There's two falls, actually. Right off the cliff.
Oh my god. This is a full-on summer movie.
This is not a harvest movie.
Yes.
Yes. All right.
It is a very effective horror movie, though. So,
I agree, but not the Halloween fun that you were looking for.
Wow. I'm going to find it.
Where are we at on this, then? Are we 0 for 3 with Halloween movies?
I said the other one was The Witch is
a Halloween movie, so yeah. We're 1 for 3.
What about, I guess our next movie will be our tiebreaker. What is that going to be?
Well, that would tie it up. Is Get Out a Halloween movie? Did we determine that?
We said no.
Okay, so...
So the best we can get is tie.
We can get a tie. Okay, next, I know everybody's waiting for The Shining. But I'm going to throw a curveball here. First of all, I'll watch The Shining anytime of the year. Right now, our last two movies, you hinted at it before, Empowered Females Who Joined the Dark Side.
Right.
Both of these movies from the studio A24.
Okay.
Our first movie, Blumhouse. I'm bringing it back to Blumhouse. We're going to watch the 2019 Ready or Not.
Oh, wow.
I think that is a fun horror comedy.
I'm going to call it already. That's a Halloween movie.
I think it's a Halloween movie.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it yet? Oh,
no,
great.
You watched it with Logan.
I did watch it with Logan. I thought you had seen it separately.
No.
Great. I can't wait. I can't wait to introduce you to it. That's...
I was really expecting The Shining.
I've been going to do The Shining, and I just said, there's something I may want to do with The Shining later. I didn't plan to do it. I want to watch it as a double feature with Dr. Sleep and review those movies together.
Okay.
And we'll do that down the line somewhere.
We don't have to do that on a Halloween.
I should have planned it for Halloween to watch The Shining and have my next pick be Dr. Sleep, but we'll figure it out later.
Right.
Also, The Shining is something that has been, it's a 40-year-old movie. It has been reviewed to death. It has been essays. There have been documentaries about it. Things have been said about The Shining.
But not by us.
Not by us. And I do understand that. It's never stopped us. We did 2001. Same thing. But I do think like Ready or Not is a movie that got some buzz, but I want to put a bigger spotlight on it. I think Blumhouse makes really fun horror movies. We've watched a couple of them already. And we're going to do this one. We're going to have a good time with it.
Let's do it.
Awesome.
I'm excited.
So, Ready or Not, if you are listening and you have access to HBO, it is streaming on HBO this month. So, check it out. Watch along with us and listen to our discussion. I want to give a shout out to the people who do watch stuff with us. Keith Gala is a big one from the Pop-Up Filmcast.
Right.
He'll message me and go, "Hey man, I'm checking out Haywire. I'm watching this." And we'll have little discussions with DMs. So if you're watching along with us, shout us out on Twitter. Let us know know what you think of our discussions coming up after him.
That's exciting to have people watching with us.
It is fun. Yeah. 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 It's a good time.
You can also just pick out which episodes you have seen.
Yeah. I do that with movie podcasts sometimes.
Yeah.
Let's move into shout-outs.
Let's do it.
Austin, what do you got?
So, my shout-out is called the Orange Shirt Society. They started the Orange Shirt Day, which is September 30th. It's a holiday in Canada and the U.S. More so in Canada, though. And it's all about raising awareness for the residential schools for Indigenous people.
Okay.
It's sort of a... first step to fixing the problems that we have with that...
Is this like an antithesis to the schools that we put Native Americans in to make them less Native American, to erase culture and
things
like that?
That is exactly what it is. So, awesome. Yeah, September 30th, wear an orange shirt. It's a little late now that this episode... But
this is definitely... it looks like a good organization. Either way, you can make donations still... we'll have a link in the show notes.
We will. I think it's a good cause, and
it looks like I've never heard of this. This is really cool.
It's a good reminder of sort of acknowledging our history and what we've done wrong in the past.
Well, I mean, I think that's a big thing. We talk a lot about, and we vilify our past, and we talk a lot about missteps we've made without making a lot of reparations to set things right, and to, you know, Native Americans definitely got the short end of the stick when white people showed up, and what we did is gave them shitty tracts of land and told them they can put casinos on them. But as far as something like this, that is actually like, hey, look, if we tried to erase your culture, now we're going to do things to support, you know, more awareness of your
the culture. Building up.
I kind of see a big movement towards Native American culture and celebrating that in the last, you know, decade or so. And I think that's a really positive thing.
I really hope that trend keeps going.
It's cool that that's Canadian and American as well.
Yeah.
I have something far less serious, but...
equally valid.
I think it's equally valid. This is David Lynch Theater. And this is a YouTube channel. It's David Lynch, the filmmaker, the director, Twin Peaks, Blue Velvet, the original Dune movie, all these things. David Lynch, very strange guy. Every day, he picks a number. He has a jar full of ping pong balls that are numbered. He picks one, he tells you what it is, and that's it. He also does a weather report. Tells you what the weather's like in LA. And there's usually a little nugget of his personal thoughts in there. They're very funny. They're very nonsensical. They're very meaningless. I watch them every day. I get the number and I go, let's see if this number plays into my day at all. It's just fun.
Does it ever?
No, but it doesn't matter. It is something to do. I think David Lynch is, it took me a long time to come around on David Lynch and figure out like, oh, this guy is a very specific creative genius.
Right.
In that so much of his stuff makes no sense and he's super unapologetic about it. And it's just, and this is just a really interesting kind of channel. I was made aware of it a couple weeks ago by my buddy Corey Scott and Levi Krauss, who's a great artist, a comic artist. So I was really happy to find that, and I want to pass it along, and that link will also be in the show notes for this one.
It's the most nonsensical news channel.
It is.
Can you even call it that?
You know,
there's a weather report.
It's news that I don't feel depressed about watching.
Right.
And that's what I need. Just a little nugget of that.
2020 needs that.
I think more than ever. At this point, I'm going to thank you for listening to this episode of The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rood. If you enjoy our show, please leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. It helps our visibility and it helps us grow the show.
And another way you can help us grow is to tell a friend. Word of mouth is pretty much the best way to spread a podcast, so...
Agreed.
Yeah. If you want to tell a friend or post on social media, it would help us out.
Austin, social media.
Austin.n.rude on Instagram and TikTok. And then Austin and Rude Twitter.
And I am philrude.com and Phil Rood on YouTube, where you can watch this podcast as I make the artwork for it.
Cool.
Austin, you want to read the credits?
Yep. We do everything ourselves.
Well, there you have it. We'll see you next time on The Picture Show.
See ya.
Did you have nightmares last night?
No, actually. I had dreams about nature.
Mm. Is anybody wearing clothes?
I wasn't.
Gross. Nudity is gross.
Okay, Puritan.
I cast you out! Burn you in a bear costume.
I would love that, by the way.
I mean, look, if you gotta go.
It's like a warm
maybe
hug.
Maybe for my funeral. I don't want to die that way, but maybe for my funeral.
That's
like,
how you
want to
be
I
cremated?
I want you guys to sew me into a live bear that you kill along with me.
Right.
And
and then do you want someone to pee on your ashes?
Ooh, no. I think this movie determined that was a bad thing. That's frowned upon.
Frowned upon, yeah. But it happened.
Only because Mark was the biggest jerk in this movie. And that's saying something.
He's the true villain.
Yeah, he kind of is.